keeps the smile on her face.
But, like, if you did work, it would be okay. Like, if you get a night shift, you don't have to be in for me at nights anymore. I can watch myself.
Agnes sat up and down the last of the lager. She seemed like she wanted to change the subject. Shuggy watched her as she pulled together two FGs from their unwanted clothes. She arranged a pink Angora jumper of hers and a too small gangster outfit of his into a pair of hollowed-out Guy Fawkes dummies. Shuggy followed her into the kitchen, where she hung them on the clothes pulley. She pulled on the rope, and the pulley ascended to the ceiling again. They twisted there, full of life. Two versions of their old selves hanging in wait for the new family.
"The woman's named Susan," said Agnes. "She's nice. She has four wains and a carpet fitter for a man. Never claimed the dole in his life. Wait till they get a load of him round here."
"Are we tricking her?"
asked Shuggy, full of concern for the new tenants. Agnes rubbed her cheek like she was trying to soothe herself, like her dentures were pinching at the back. She poured herself a fresh mug of lager.
"No.
She has a motor and a man. They didn't seem that bothered to be so far out." She put her finger down the neck of Shuggy's jumper, pulled it out, and rubbed his skin, like she was checking whether a lazy maid had hoovered under a carpet. There was fine hair starting to bud on the plane of his small chest. She worried it with her nail, but said nothing about it.
"You're awful pale. When was the last time you were outside?"
He didn't want to tell her about Francis McAvaney and the kitchen knife. He didn't want to admit he had been too scared to linger outside since that day he had threatened to stab him. In the end, he didn't have to say anything. Agnes's mind was a jumping slide projector. She said,
"You'll not remember the city. You were too wee.
But there's dancing. All kinds of dancing and big shops. You can be outside all the time because there's that much to do." He thought he saw her inflate with false hope, like she was trying to puff herself up with a delicate excitement. It seemed as fragile as thistledown.
"You'll not remember, but you'll see." "I can't wait."
It was a lie, but only half of one. He couldn't admit it to her, but the city scared him slightly. The vast, uncontrollable nature of it. All the alcoholics he could lose her to. The dark pubs. The men who might take advantage. All the unknown streets she could slip down and he could lose her on. At least the pit had been a known element. It had held them stuck like flies on paper, bounding them in on four sides by nothing. She could harm herself here, but he could not lose her. Shuggy tried not to dwell.
"When we flit, will you really try to stop the drinking?" "I said so, didn't I?"
There was a faint look of disbelief in his eyes. He couldn't help it. He turned to the sink to wash the last of the dishes, to hide his face. It got her goat.
"Are you calling me a bloody liar?"
She had been drinking all day. Her mood was a low-level har, foggy, dark and heavy, but holding steady without rain. Shuggy did not want to burst this cloudiness and force the bad weather.
"No, sorry."
Agnes stubbed her cigarette out on the edge of the sink. She lifted her lager mug and tossed the contents down the drain. It all happened so forcefully, so fast, that Shuggy got sprayed with the dregs and stepped back, soaked and blinking. Agnes opened the planking place under the sink and took out her last two Carlsberg. She handed one to him and tore open the other herself. She held it over the sink
and the lager poured down the drain in a choking, sputtering torrent. When it was empty, and the last of the white yeasty foam had fallen into the sink like damp snow, she threw the can at the bin and missed, the tin rattling on the linoleum floor. All Shuggy could do was step back, wide-eyed, and hold on to the worktop for balance. Agnes, possessed by something now, ran around the house. He could hear her clawing underneath furniture and scrabbling behind the wardrobe. She came back with a half dozen bottles, all the forgotten dregs of vodka, all the last slugs she had passed out before finishing. She emptied them down the sink with a dramatic flourish. Shuggy had never seen her do that before. He had never seen her waste good drink. On the rare occasions she promised to get sober, she would still drink it all first, every single drop, before she started with the fierce withdrawals and the bulking and the shaking. There were other times she fell sober because she had no choice. On the weeks when all the benefit money was gone and no man would bring her a carry-out, then a type of grudging sobriety would start. If that happened on a Thursday, then her sobriety had a four-day running start. Shuggy always rooted for it, but the drink rarely lost. It was like a bully who gave Agnes that running start in the grinning confidence he would catch her easily, and she'd be battered again when the benefit book was cashed again the following Monday. Still, Shuggy always fell for it. He opened the last bronze can. He watched her out of the side of his eye as he poured it down the sink, in a gentle, tentative trickle, ready to stop at any moment. Agnes watched him do it, her head tilted back like she was a fine lady. "Do you believe me now?" Shuggy pushed his thumb knuckle into his eye socket to steady himself, to stop the hopeful tears. "Thank you." Agnes stiffened, but she smiled, a faint, tremulous thing. "No more drinking for me. I'm not saying it'll be easy, but that's the best thing about the city. No one will know us from Adam." She picked some ooze from their hanging effigies. They spun in the quiet kitchen. "And you? You can be like the other boys. We can be brand new."
1989, The East End. Chapter 28.
After the isolation of the slag hills, the tenements felt like a thriving hub of life. The main road was lined with thick sandstone buildings, and set into the base of them were hundreds of little shops, a post office every mile, a chip shop nearly every block, and all sorts of dress and shoe shops where Agnes could shop on tick. Shiny cars waited at lights and then inched along in patient lines. There were double-decker buses, two at a time, stopping every block or so. There was a cinema, a dance hall, a big green park, and as many chapels and churches as he had ever seen. The pavements were full of people going about their messages, and nobody paid any mind to the others. They moved independently, in oblivious, anonymous, take it for granted, freedom. The people didn't even nod hello to each other, and Shuggy could bet there was not a single cousin amongst them. The moving lorry made some sharp turns onto tighter side streets. The sky felt far away now, and the only break in the wall of tenements was at the corners, where streets of even more tenements branched outwards. Shuggy looked up. It felt like they were dug into the very earth, deep inside a sandstone valley. They came to a stop, blocking the street completely, and with a loud rattle, the men from the AA dropped the tailgate. Agnes looked at the piece of paper and stood looking up at the tenement. It was a greyish-blonde building, sat in the middle of a long wall of the same. The door had buzzers for 8 flats, and Agnes found the ones for the 3rd floor. This is us now, she said, pointing to one for the boy to see. He was too old for it, but he let her hold his hand, if only to keep her moving forward and not send her itching for drink. Shuggy hooked her hand in his. It felt small to him all of a sudden. She was wearing every ring she still owned, but despite the chilled metal, he could feel the nerves and the clammy want in her palm. Let's promise to be brand new. Let's just promise to be normal, he prayed, as they held hands like newlyweds. The close mouth was clean and cold. The walls, the floor, and the stairs had the look of being carved from a single piece of beautiful stone. And it all smelled like it had been recently wiped out with bleach. They climbed the stone stairs slowly, stepping to the side to let the men get up and down with the boxes. On each landing, two heavy doors faced each other, each floor neatly and evenly divided. As they passed each landing, floorboards squeaked behind some of the doors. Agnes held her head high and carried on up the stairs. The door of the flat was on the right-hand side of the third stone landing. As they stepped inside, Agnes made a quick inventory of the dirt that remained. The carpets that needed to go, pointing at finger marks here and there like she was a tour guide.
Aye, she wasn't very clean, she said coldly. She'll likely do fine out in the pits.
The new flat was small. It had a stubby, L-shaped hallway, and he found himself wondering where she would put her telephone table. At the front of the tenement, looking out onto the street, was a big bay-windowed living room, and next door to that was a very small master bedroom. At the back of the tenement was the narrow kitchenette and a tiny box bedroom. Shuggy paced the small bedroom, measuring it heel to toe in both directions, hoping it would fit two beds. But it never could. It suddenly felt final, and it made a mess leak. Agnes stood by the big bay window and looked out over the street. Shuggy encircled her with his arms, and these brand new people allowed themselves a minute of quiet, peaceful daydreaming. Agnes scratched the back of her calf with the other foot. Shuggy knew it was in her nature to be contrary. The moving men had finished before long, and as they took the last of the cardboard with them, Agnes gathered her mohair coat and promised Shuggy hot tea and apple pastries for their lunch. Shuggy closed the door behind her and ignored where her shoe buckle had snagged the back of her tights. He stood alone a long time at the kitchenette window and stared into the enclosed back green. Completely walled in by the tenements, the space was divided by 5-foot walls, so that every building had an equal share of scabrous grass, dominated by a concrete bin shed. Every square of green was teeming with wains, like petri dishes hoaching with life. The air was filled with echoing screams and laughter, amplified by the sandstone enclosure. Every so often a wain would shriek up at the back of a building, and shortly thereafter a window would swing open and a bag of crisps or a set of keys would be tossed down 4 stories to the ground. Shuggy sat and watched the scene, a coliseum of sorts, for most of the afternoon, wondering what it must feel like to play, to be so carefree. He watched the wains climb the walls and invade other back greens. He saw heads get cracked and toddlers get shoved off of bin shed roofs. A window would open, and an officious finger would single out the offending gladiator. And then that child, wailing in fear and contrition, would not be seen for the rest of the day. Shuggy eventually grew bored with the brutality. As he waited for her to return with the tea things, he fell on the little red football book and for the 100th time, started at page 1.
He was reading the results for Arbroath when he heard the key in the new lock. From the seat at the window in the kitchenette, he could already tell.
"Hello, son."
She stood in the open doorway, her eyes loose in her head, and there was a wide, too toothy smile on her face.
"Have you been drinking?"
he asked, already knowing the answer.
"No."
"Come here. Let me smell you." Shuggy crossed the empty kitchenette.
"Smell me?" she said. "Who do you think you are?"
He was getting taller every day. He took hold of her sleeve and pulled her towards him with all the command of a grown man. She wobbled on her feet and tried to wrench her sleeve free. He sniffed at her.
"You have. You have been drinking."
"Look at you.
You love to spoil my fun."
Agnes tried again to pry him from her sleeve.
"I just had a wee half with my new pal, Marie." "Marie, you promised we would be brand new."
"We are. We are." She was becoming irritated by her jailer.
"You lied. You didn't even try. We are not new. We are just the fucking same."
Shuggy pulled her sleeve so hard the jumper stretched and the neck slid off her shoulder. There, on the soft white skin, was a single black brass strap. He reached out to grab it.
"Get off me!"
Agnes looked frightened now. She tucked in her jumper and twisted away so abruptly that the boy took to the air. He landed with a crack against the wall and slid to the floor in the corner of the hallway. Agnes was mumbling to herself.
"Who do you think you are to speak to me like that?"
A thought crossed her mind, and she turned on him again.
"Your father. Do you think you are your bastard and father?"
Her head sat back in her neck in ugly defiance. She spat down on him.
"That'll be the fucking day, sunshine."
He watched her put the stretched jumper back on her shoulder and go back out the front door without shutting it behind her. In the echoing close, he heard her go from door to door. She chapped each door, and when someone answered, she introduced herself with a slurring politeness.
"Hello. I am so sorry to bother you. My name is Agnes. I am your new neighbour."
Shuggy heard the good people of the tenement pause and then return awkward greetings. He could almost hear their eyes running up and down the length of her, taking her in, making up their minds. This woman, with her bottle-dyed jet-black hair, in the shiny black tights and the black high heels, was already drunk by lunchtime. The secondary school was bigger than any he had seen. He had waited and cautiously followed a boy that lived on the landing downstairs. The boy was tanned the colour of summer holidays. At the street corners, he turned around and with big brown eyes, he looked suspiciously at the pale boy who was following him like a stray. Shuggy had set up the ironing board and ironed his own clothes for the first day. His trousers were a grey school wool and were topped with a smart red jumper that Agnes had bought for him with cigarette coupons. He ironed them till they were perfectly flat and two-dimensional. Then he ironed the underwear and the socks. Following behind the boy, Shuggy rounded a corner. And there it was. It sprawled forever and looked like a city of its own. Big concrete cubes and rectangles that intersected at different angles and were surrounded by lower buildings that looked like porta cabins, but more permanent. There were no windows to the outside, just this giant concrete mess of shapes in the middle of a flat expanse of asphalt and stone and brown mud. He followed the boy in through a main gate. The schoolyard was big, and it was full. Inside it was a moving mass of Protestant blue, and white and some red. Nearly every boy had a Glasgow Rangers shirt on, a training jacket, or at least a sports bag. Everywhere he looked, McEwen's lager was spelt out in big white letters. Shuggy put his hand in his pocket and felt better feeling the dog-eared red book there. The bell rang, and he followed the boy in through some glass doors. For want of a better idea, he followed the boy to his class. The children took familiar seats and set about talking at the top of their voices. Shuggy put his bag on a desk at the back and tried to hide behind it. A short, middle-aged man with a white beard came into the classroom. He looked like an angry terrier, and he spoke with a very loud Glaswegian accent.
"Right, shut your faces, yous lot. Let's go for the record, and then yous can all get back to talking about earrings and perms and that." He paused. "And that's just the boys."
The room made a bored huff. The man took the register, and when he got to the end, the room fell about shouting again. The teacher folded his arms and closed his eyes and leaned back against the edge of the desk, trying to steal 5 minutes more sleep. Shuggy put his hand in the air and then took it down and then raised it again.
"Sir," he said too quietly. "Sir."
The teacher opened his eyes and looked at the new boy.
"Aye?"
he asked, still not familiar with the New Year's faces.
"I'm new,"
said Shuggy, too quiet to cut through the rabble.
"Everybody is new, son," said the man.
"I know, but I think I am a late enrolment."
He used the term Agnes had told him to use. The room fell quiet. 30 heads turned as one to look at him. Boys with top lips dirty with hair and girls already with women's bodies and faces broken out in little white spots.
"You're what?"
asked the terrier-faced teacher.
I'm a late enrolment, sir, from another school."
The room was now silent.
"Oh," said the teacher. "What's your name?"
Before he could answer, it started. It sounded like a murmur, and then someone said it out loud, and the whisper became outright laughter.
"Is it Gaylord?"
said a rat-faced boy at the front. The room erupted.
"Big Bobby Bender,"
said another. Shuggy tried to talk over them. His face burned red.
"It's Shuggy, sir. Hugh Bain. I'm transferred here from St. Luke's."
"Listen to that voice,"
said another boy with tight curly hair. He opened his eyes wide like he had hit the bullying jackpot.
"Air posh boy, where did you get that fucking accent? Are you a wee ballet dancer or what?"
This went down the best of all. It was a divine inspiration to the others.
"Gee's a wee dance,"
they squealed with laughter.
"12 for us, you wee bender."
Shuggy sat there listening to them amuse themselves. He took the red football book and dropped it into the dark drawer of this strange school desk. He was glad, at least, to be done with that. It was clear now. Nobody would get to be made brand new. Chapter 29. The brown-eyed boy who lived downstairs in the tenement knocked on the door as though they were old friends. In the months since they had moved in, he had done his best to ignore Shuggy. Now, when Shuggy answered the door, the brown-eyed boy tilted his head in greeting, told him to get his coat and follow him.
"What for?"
asked Shuggy, rather ungratefully.
"'Cause I need your help."
The boy was already halfway back down the close. Keir Weir was a palette of warm tones all chosen because of how well they went together. He was more tan than anyone Shuggy had ever known, and his brown hair shone with memories of a sun it had rarely seen. His eyes were richly grained, like walnut wood, and his lips were shaped and arched in a way that made Shuggy stare. He would have looked like a teen pinup if it wasn't for the dripping tip of his nose and the continual cold sore that bothered his top lip.
Shuggy pulled on his jerkin and followed like an obedient footman. When they got to the mouth of the close, Keir spun on his heels and stopped him in his stride.
"Look, you're no going out with me looking like that."
Shuggy looked down at himself. He was wearing what he wore every day. Old wool school trousers, old black shoes and a blue anorak from the catalogue that looked like one of Agnes's old coats that she would be embarrassed to run the messages in.
"You'll give me a brass neck. Does your ma still dress you?"
Keir pushed his hands into Shuggy's anorak. He reached around into the small of Shuggy's back and with a tug pulled on the adjustable cords there. The jacket cinched in at the waist till it almost cut him in two and fluted at the hem like an Edwardian doublet. The brown-eyed boy took the neatly ironed collar and flipped her up. Then he roughly pulled the plastic zip all the way to the top till Shuggy felt like he was peering out from inside a ship's funnel. Shuggy tilted his head back and talked over the top.
"Where are we going?"
"I'm going to introduce you to some lasses. I can't have you looking like a fanny."
Keir drew a cheap black comb from his back pocket. One end was chewed to uselessness. He spat a foamy white gobful onto it and scraped a line down the dead centre of Shuggy's head. Shuggy recoiled in horror, but Keir put his long fingers around the nape of Shuggy's neck and braced him in place. It was how men pulled women towards them in all the pictures Agnes liked on telly. It meant nothing to Keir, but Shuggy felt like the back of his eyeballs were sweating. The drag of the buckled comb made his skull feel like it had been cleanly and evenly split. The boy roughly rearranged Agnes's neat sideswipe and parted the black hair sharply into heavy curtains. "There." He rubbed the back of Shuggy's head, fair pleased with his work. "You look mere hardcore now." He turned and went out on the street.
"Just stay what I do, and there'll be nae problems, right?"
"Okay,"
agreed Shuggy, lurching after him, imagining ways he could make Keir grab at him again. Keir Weir swaggered bandy-legged up the street. The bottom of his face was obscured by his anorak collar, and his hands were tucked deep into the pockets of his jacket. Shuggy walked a little behind and tried to use a wide gate like Leek had once shown him.
"We're going to meet a couple of lassies. One's my bird, the other is our wee pal. She's a right wee ride," he said. "Have you already got a bird?"
"Yes,"
lied Shuggy.
"Who?"
asked Keir. Only his frown and his eyes were visible over the high neck of his anorak.
"A girl from where I used to live."
"Why? What's her name then?"
Shuggy couldn't tell if Keir was sneering now. It was hard to talk when you couldn't see the person's lips. He stuttered.
Madonna.
As soon as the word escaped, he was grateful for the collar. His face flushed a liar's pink. Keir looked at him with narrowing eyes. A shadow passed his face that said he was beginning to regret having asked him out.
"Aye, is that right?"
His eyebrow arched high above his collar.
"Have you even fingered her yet?"
Shuggy's mouth went slack behind the facade. He nodded, slowly. Shuggy heard the bored air escape Keir, watched his hair curtains bounce from the draft.
"Well, my bird's pal is right dirty. She'll give you a ride if you ask,"
he sneered again.
"That's if Madonna doesn't mind."
He lowered a cigarette doubt into his collar, like a bucket into a well.
"Anyway, I just want you to stop her bothering us. Got it?"
They walked through the blonde tenemented streets, not stopping to watch women pour buckets of bleach water out on the pavement. Keir cut through the estate with a man's stride, clipping corners, jumping benches and small stone walls. He made a direct and efficient line to her. Shuggy half jogged behind. Keir slowed his stride only when they got to a block of modern-looking flats. He stubbed out his wrinkled cigarette doubt
and reached around in his pocket and took out a piece of chewing gum. He put it in his mouth and chewed it quickly. Shuggy could smell the sweet peppermint casing break between his big white teeth. He chomped it like a hungry dog and then drew it out of his mouth.
"Here,"
he said, offering the wet gum to Shuggy.
"You're gonna want to be fresh for the ladies."
Shuggy blinked at the grey gum between the boy's wet fingers. He was glad again of the upturned collar, as his mouth turned down in a distasteful frown.
"Don't be a fucking poof. Here."
Keir thrust the gum at him. Reluctantly, Shuggy took the wad and put it in his mouth. It was slimy and warm, and it tasted of mint and beans and cigarettes. He found he didn't mind. He rolled it slowly around his mouth and savoured it. He used his tongue to push the last of Keir's spit up into the dry pocket above his teeth, behind his lips, like it might last longest there. They climbed the stairs to the top floor flats. Every landing had a big open balcony, and Shuggy was happy to stop at each and admire the view, like a contented pensioner. When they reached the top, Keir turned to him and said,
"Try not to sound like such a posh boy, all right? I don't want them to laugh at us."
Keir pushed the bell at the side of a mottled glass door. Inside, a door opened and tinny pop music filled the hallway. They watched a cloud of blonde hair get closer and closer through the bubbled glass. There, in the doorway, was a short, plain girl, pale-skinned, with big green eyes obscured behind thick pink glasses. Her gelled hair was scraped back from her face and erupted in a large, permed ponytail. On the side of her head, arranged in neat rows, were pink-coloured hair clips that looked like a rack of ribs from a pig. She was a little younger than the boys. The messy paint on her fingernails made Shuggy think of the McAvaney girls, when they would slide around clumsily in Colleen's low heels.
"Hiya,"
said the girl through the crack in the door.
"Hiya, doll."
Keir wore a sideways smile. He put his palm possessively on the door. The girl giggled, and then eyed Shuggy suspiciously.
"What do you two want?"
She closed the door slightly.
"Is your ma home?" asked Keir. "You know fine well she's out working. Can we come in for a wee while then?" "No."
She squirmed and closed the door more.
"How no? 'Cause I said so. My ma said she would batter me if I let you in when she was at work again."
"Oh,
come on."
He stepped out of his shoes.
"No,"
she squawked childishly.
"You ruined it last time. You peed all over the toilet seat and the skirting board. My ma went spare when she saw it. I got leathered."
She closed the door till only her face fit in the crack. They stood this way for a moment. Inside there was the sound of a pop cassette tape being turned over. Keir spoke first.
"Well, I brought you this."
In his hand was a bar of soap wrapped in clear pearlescent cellophane. It looked like the cheap soaps that were piled high at the Barra's market, the ones Agnes turned her nose up at. It said clearly on the side, "Not to be sold individually." Her small white hand came out from behind the door and cautiously took the soap. The cellophane made a crisp, crinkling noise. The young girl gasped in delight, then added,
"That changes nothing. Are you still wanting to be my bird?"
She looked at the bar of soap and back at the tall boy.
"Aye, maybe. Do you want to come out then? You know, and kick around for a wee while?" "No, I canny,"
she pouted.
"How no?"
Keir Weir was batting his brown eyes as hard as he could.
"'Cause Leanne is here, that's how no."
Keir nodded and presented his prepared plan.
"Well, this is Shuggy. He fancies Leanne."
Shuggy stepped from the shadows of the close.
"So she can come and all."
The girl's eyes went white. She let out a squeak, and her little head popped back into the hallway
as the glass door slammed shut. Shuggy watched the distorted puff of blonde hair race down the hall. Was this to be the moment that would make him normal? All the practicing at walking, all the chasing of a bladder ball and learning outdated football scores. It was all for this. The door opened, and two small faces peered out. Then the door slammed shut again. There was a riot of laughter from inside the hallway. Kia shifted nervously.
"Try and look less like a big poof, would you?"
he hissed without turning. Shuggy inhaled a deep breath and tried to stand up broad and straight, and then, like an unhappy turtle, he lowered his face into the anorak with a scowl. The door opened again, wider this time. The two girls stood there, fidgeting with delight. Leanne Kelly was a good foot taller than the other girl and peered out at them over the bush of blonde perm. Her jaw was set firm, and she wore no makeup or trinkets in her hair. From the way she stepped forward and squared herself to the boys, it was clear that she had been raised with a colony of brothers. When she spoke, her mouth was pinched like it was guarding her teeth. Shuggy thought her eyes were like little watchful raisins.
"How can you fancy me? I've never even seen you," she asked, bluntly.
Shuggy went blank, and Keir kicked him hard in the soft of his ankle tendon.
"Well, it's just that I heard so many nice things about you."
The girl wrinkled her nose in disbelief.
"What? Now?" "I heard that you were very attractive." "Why do you speak so funny?"
she said without smiling, the wrinkle still in her nose.
"What school do you go to?"
The girl stepped further out into the daylight of the close, and Shuggy realised her face wasn't actually dirty, but covered in 1,000 beautiful freckles. Her raisin eyes still shot about, taking him in suspiciously.
"I go to the school up the road," he said. "That proddy dump?" "Yes."
The girl sighed, and the wrinkle fell off her nose.
"Too bad. I go to St. Mungo. It's for Catholics." "That's okay. My mother is a Catholic, so I'm a halfer, I suppose."
A thin smile spread across her lips.
"Doesn't it matter around here? My brothers would skin me if they knew I was going around with a dirty orange dog."
Shuggy tried to hide his relief. It flooded over him, and he wanted to exhale long and low. He could tell her he was mostly Catholic, that he had taken communion, but instead...
"Oh, well, okay then. It was nice to meet you."
He turned away with a gentlemanly wave goodbye. He wanted to run.
"Don't play so hard to get," Leanne exhaled loudly. "At least let me get my fucking jumper then."
It was smurring lightly by the time they went back out onto the grey streets. They walked in neat sets of two, up and down between the identical tenements. At first, Shuggy could feel the girl steal sideways glances at him. Then she was openly gawping in the puzzled way that he himself stared at starving African babies on the telly. Her mouth hung open and her eyes wanted to look away but couldn't, because they were confused by what they saw. All the while, she played absent-mindedly with the end of her long brown ponytail.
"You look funny,"
she declared finally, her assessment complete.
"Sorry?"
He wondered how long it would be until he could go home.
"You don't have a dad, do you?"
Shuggy turned his head in the funnel neck.
"Why do you say that?" "I can just tell," she huffed, like a bored clairvoyant. "I'm just good at guessing things like that." "My dad is dead," he said. And then he wondered if he would even ever know if it were true. "Really? Mine too?"
She was brightening. Then she added, as though she had forgotten,
"I mean, sorry, that's dead sad." Shuggy shook his curtained hair.
No, I think it's great.
Leanne giggled.
That's a terrible thing to say. God's going to get you.
It's okay. My dad was a bad man.
They walked on a little further before she spoke again.
Do you even like lassies?
I don't know.
It fell out of him unexpectedly, almost like a loose fart, and he regretted it instantly. His face flushed, and his eyes darted to her. She was his best chance at being a normal boy, and already he had ruined it. But the girl simply sighed.
Aye, me either. Like boys, that is.
She chewed on it for a moment, and then added, almost defeatedly,
So, do you want to be my boyfriend anyhow? You know, just for the now.
Okay, said Shuggy. Just for the now.
She slid her hand into his. Her hand was longer than his own, but he liked the way it felt. Safe and warm. They came to a ragged bit of muddy grass with blue-legged Wains playing football. At the far side, Kieran the blonde girl pushed through a split in a chain-link fence. Leanne stopped stubbornly and folded her arms across her bony chest. He was half stunned by how her teeth ground together in the tight mouth.
Dirty perverts, she spat. That's all they want to do. Go in there and suck the scabby faces off one another. Makes me sick, the way they paw at each other. She's been a right nympho since she turned 13.
The pair watched Keir and his date receding into the waste ground. Shuggy spoke first.
They'll just think we are funny if we don't go in.
The girl thought about it for a minute. She dug at the dirt with her toe.
So? She pouted. I'll get my brothers to murder them.
Keir turned around, waist high in the weeds, and with a flick of his wrist commanded Shuggy to hurry the fuck up. Shuggy held the wire back, and with a sigh, Leanne wearily went through the hole, bending her height almost in half. On the other side of the fence, the grass crested in a gentle, unkempt hill. On the downslope of the hill ran the motorway to Edinburgh. Traffic screamed by at terrifying speeds less than 20 feet away. They walked along the grassy knoll beside the hard shoulder until they reached a pedestrian footbridge. One by one, the children crawled under the bridge and shuffled along the concrete embankment that slid down and onto the motorway. It smelled of piss and car fumes, but it was dry, and if they sat directly behind one of the broad structural columns, it was almost private. They sat there, the two couples, in a fidgety silence, watching the Saturday morning day trippers rush by. They rolled chucky stones down the side of the embankment and cheered when the stones raced to the bottom, got caught in the wheels of the speeding cars, and flew dangerously backwards down the motorway.
You got any fags? Asked the blonde girl.
She was flattening an unruly hair into a piggy hair clip.
No,
answered Keir.
Honest to God, I don't know why I am your bird, she moaned. Stookie tell me he'd give us a packet of fags a week if I went with him, didn't he, Leanne?
Aye,
said the tall girl, absent-mindedly. Keir shrugged. He would call her bluff.
Away you go with Stookie, then. See if I care.
It was freezing under the bridge, away from the weak sunshine, and Leanne started to rattle with the cold. Shuggy slipped off his anorak. He watched her put it on with a glad smile and laughed when her long arms stuck out the bottom of the too short sleeves. She put her long arm around him. They sat quietly like this for a long time, watching the traffic rush by. When Shuggy looked around, he saw that Keir was lying on top of the blonde girl. He was opening and closing his mouth onto hers in a way that looked like he was trying to be sick. Shuggy watched a long, thin hand slide up inside the girl's sweatshirt. Keir pushed himself against her leg, the muscles in his arse tightening with concentration. And Shuggy watched him move his head up and down in her mouth like he was chewing her. He was moaning and grinding as the girl squirmed clumsily underneath him. Shuggy savoured the sight of the ropes in the boy's arms, the tide of his back, the pulse of his arse. Keir opened his eyes and met Shuggy's hungry gaze. The outline of his mouth was wet and red and chapped raw. He narrowed his brown eyes.
"What are you looking at, my fucking arse?"
"No."
Shuggy turned back around. The cars had thinned out. The blonde girl's glasses were moist and crooked on her face. She looked like she had been assaulted.
"Leanne, hen, you all right, doll?"
Her tiny voice echoed off the concrete bridge above. Leanne, cold and bored, simply shrugged without looking back. The pair of them sat in silence, listening to the young lovers behind them. Keir spoke first, in a voice that was deliberately too loud.
"See,"
he said to the crushed girl,
"everybody but you thinks I'm pure shaggable."
"You're a stirring bastard,"
moaned the girl, but she was squirming beneath him again. Keir hocked a chewy phlegm wad out onto the concrete. Shuggy could feel Keir's eyes burning into his neck. The boy turned back to the crushed girl.
"Can I finger you for a wee while?" he asked bluntly.
"No, it's too cold."
"Oh, please," he pleaded. "I'll blow on them first to warm them up. You don't even have to take your pants off."
"No.
But I tell you I love you, and I bought you soap."
"You stole that soap,"
the blonde girl said, before she sighed and added,
"All right then, but just for a wee minute, and you need to warm your fingers first."
Shuggy's face had turned scarlet. He could feel the heat radiate off it. He took Keir's chewed comb out of his pocket and slowly slipped the end into his mouth. It smelled like cigarettes and boy's hair gel. It smelled like Keir.
"If you want, I'll let you touch my tits," said Leanne next to him. "That's if you want."
He shook his head without looking at her.
"No thanks."
He let a handful of small grey stones roll down the embankment and onto the motorway. The girl dug at a line of green moss.
"Well, I'm no sitting here to catch my death."
Shuggy drew the chewed comb from his mouth and wiped the wet end of it on his trousers. It left a wet, dark patch in his leg.
"Maybe I could comb your hair?"
The girl didn't answer, and he felt the red flush back into his face. Then she sighed and slowly drew the furry elastic band from her hair, and the thin, straight ponytail fell around her ears. The tightness in her face softened. Her eyebrows lowered, and her freckled skin looked less taut and transparent. She looked kinder now, and much younger. Shuggy took the comb and ran it the length of her hair. The brown was more than just brown. It was a million shades of glossy reds and a melange of dark chestnuts. The hair slid through his fingers like silk, each strand light as gossamer. They sat like this for a long while, listening to the clumsy moaning behind them and watching the buses come and go to Edinburgh. Shuggy drew the comb gently through the girl's hair, and soon she closed her eyes and relaxed her head against his chest.
"Does your ma take a drink?"
she asked abruptly.
"Sometimes, just a little,"
admitted Shuggy.
"How can you tell? You're too worried looking."
She raised a hand and found the bridge of his nose. She rubbed it gently.
"Don't worry though, mine doesn't all," she said. "I mean, well, sometimes, just a little."
Shuggy fixated on the comb gliding through the hair.
He watched how each strand separated like burn water.
I think she's going to drink herself to death. Would you be sad?
Asked the girl. He stopped combing her hair.
I would be gutted. Wouldn't you?
She shrugged.
I dunno. I think it's what all alkies want anyways.
She shivered.
To die, I mean. Some are just taking the slow road to it.
Something shook loose inside him, as if the old glue that was gumming his joints together had failed. His arms felt unexpectedly heavy, like the knotted muscles that stopped his shoulders from spreading were suddenly unravelling. He felt the words start to pour out of him. It felt good to tell her things. He hadn't known how much lighter it would feel.
It's hard to not know what you are coming into at nights.
Aye, but it's never a hot dinner, is it?
No,
admitted Shuggy. His stomach turned over with fresh worry.
Do you have many uncles?
Aye, of course, she said. You know I'm a Catholic.
No, I mean, you know, uncles.
Them? Oh, aye. They don't stay that long, scavenging bastards. They always end up battering her, and then my brothers always end up battering them. She yawned like it was too ordinary to explain. My job is to dip their pockets for money.
Really?
He was surprised at her barefaced pride.
Aye, I clean them out, every single penny.
She shrugged nonchalantly.
I need to. My ma spends that much of the message money on drink.
Shuggy picked long, broken hairs from the old comb and wound them thoughtfully round his finger.
I wonder if my mother knows yours.
Doubt it.
I mean, through the meetings, through the AA, he said.
No,
old Moira is well past that shite.
She shook her head.
Has she ever tried to send you to Alateen?
No. What's that?
It's like AA, but for families. Moira said it was a support group. She said it would help me to cope with her illness.
Did you go? The girl sat up and took her hair in her hand.
Once. But after that, no fucking way. Why should I go when she hardly makes the meetings herself, eh?
She pulled the short sleeves down over her blue hands.
Anyway, you should have seen some of the posh wee bastards that were there, all moaning that their mammy drank all the Christmas sherry and fell asleep before present opening time.
A cruel smile crossed her lips.
So, I tell a story of how my ma opened all the presents and drank my brother's Christmas aftershave by mixing it with a bottle of fizzy ginger. You should have seen their faces.
Leanne grinned like the devil and put on a fancy Edinburgh accent.
I'll have an obsession and Diet Coke, please.
Diet Coke?
Aye, she's worried about her weight.
Shuggy laughed, then felt bad for laughing.
Did she really drink that perfume? Oh, aye. Well, she tried it, drank the whole thing. It nearly killed her. She was vomiting for days.
Leanne rubbed at her chilled legs.
Her sick smelt nice, though.
Leanne's face fell again. The end of her nose was purple with cold.
The next Christmas she wised up. Old Moira Kelly got the itch and took some of the presents up the far end of Duke Street on Christmas Eve. She stood in the knee-deep snow and sold them at the side of the road for some drink money. She sold a cassette player for £5 and a wee colour pourable for 20.
I'm sorry.
The worst part is that I'm still paying the catalogue for them.
The words were on his lips before he realised he had spoken them out loud.
My mother tried to kill herself last night.
Leanne turned to face him.
Did she take some pills?
No.
Slash her wrists?
Well, no. He paused. Not this time, anyway.
Put her head in the oven?
No. She has a 4,
but I think the one in the new flat is electric. That'll not stop them.
Leanne took a strand of hair between her fingers and inspected its frayed ends.
Mamma did it once when I was away on a school trip. I'd had a lovely time at the Edinburgh Zoo looking at the penguins, but when I got home, my brothers were all stood around her laughing. She looked like she had been on the sunbeds. She tried to do herself in and baked her face instead. Half her hair had grill lines on it from the oven rack.
She plucked violently at a broken hair.
It was mental. She permanently crimped half her head and set the other side in a semi-wave.
Shuggy couldn't help but laugh. The girl giggled lightly and then sighed sadly almost as quickly.
Well, what did yours do then?
She tried to throw herself out of the window. He lowered his eyes. With no clothes on.
Jeez, oh,
the girl whistled.
Ob Moira has never tried that. Thank fuck I live on the ground floor.
Shuggy rubbed at his arm. He felt the fresh welts from her struggles scream from under his jumper. Agnes had sure enough taken to the window ledge. It was a new tactic, and it had terrorised him. She had been casting up on the telephone, and then she went quiet. When he found her, she was at the kitchenette with one leg in and one out the window, her bare cunt on the stone sill. She was naked and screaming, and he had to use his whole strength to drag her back inside. There were slivers of her skin still stuck under his fingernails. A tired, damp feeling ebbed over him now. I think the drink will kill her, and I feel like it's my fault.
Aye, it probably will kill her, she said,
much as if she were only discussing the weather.
But like I said, it's a slow road, and there's nothing you can do to help her.
The desperate slurping sounds behind them stopped. Leanne sat forward, her hair so shiny it was almost wet-looking, her face calmer and kinder now. The cold motorway air rushed between them. Shuggy let a little ball of her loose hair roll down the embankment. And suddenly, he felt lonely. Like he wanted to sit on Agnes's knee again as he had when he was little. Leanne turned and regarded him over the curve of her shoulder. In the bright headlights, he saw how pretty her eyes really were. Not only brown, but gold and green, and a sad flat grey. He knew now that he couldn't keep his promise. He had lied to Agnes, as she had lied to him about stopping the drink. She would never be able to get sober, and he, sat in the cold with a lovely girl, knew he would never feel quite like a normal boy. Chapter 30. The first thing he said to her as he came in the door from school was,
I'm hungry.
Nobody ever cared how she felt or if she was hungry. They just told her what they wanted and what they were going to take from her. She sat in the armchair and lit another cigarette while listening to the cupboard doors in the kitchenette open and shut.
Mammy, there's nothing to eat,
he shouted from the kitchen. His voice had broken, and although it was not deep, it had the entitled timbre of a grown man's. He didn't even bother to come through and see if she was there. He knew she would be. Agnes took a mouthful from the mug and asked no one in particular,
Why do you all have to take me for granted?
She could hear him drag his school bag along the carpet.
Mammy, I'm hungry. Mammy, I'm hungry, he whined. It was almost a song to him by now.
The living room door opened, and he dragged himself through. He was changing, getting taller, taking a stretch. He was always hungry. Agnes looked at him there, his hair parted differently, the clothes hanging off his skinny shoulders, and decided she didn't like this change.
Are you not going to ask me how my day was? She drawled.
Shuggy ignored her and swept round the room efficiently like a hotel maid. He drew the curtains and put on the lamps. He turned on the electric fire, the one that he used when he tried to make her fall asleep.
Turn that off!
She barked. He looked at her and then looked straight through her and left the fire on.
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
She said, with a snide sneer.
I told you I was hungry and there is nothing in the house to eat.
He turned to face her. And although he drew himself to his full height, he looked tired.
What are you going to do about it?
Standing there now, he looked like his granny. She could see Lizzie with her hand on her hip, shaking her head in disappointment, lamenting that only hell would mend her. It caught her off guard. Then it got her goat.
Don't you look at me like that.
Shuggy had had enough. He sat across from her and rubbed at the side of his temples as if his head hurt.
I said I was hungry.
He was deliberately pushing her.
What are you going to feed me? You are all the same, eh? Take, take, take. Well, let me tell you, I have no more to give. Drink, 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 he mimicked. Well, let me tell you, I'm bloody starving. You cheeky streak of piss.
Her false teeth ground together in her tight face. Only her eyes were loose and half detached, rolling under the waves of the day's drink. Shuggy rose again and stood in front of the fire.
It must be so easy for you staying here all day, but I've got to go out there and mix with those people.
He let out a long sigh like a punctured bike tire. His shoulders lost all of their bones.
Most of them can barely speak English. I can't even understand what the teachers are teaching. Easy for me.
She was slipping out of time.
They feed you a hot fucking lunch up at that school, don't they? Three hot courses, I bet. That's more than I get sat here on my own.
Shuggy put his tongue between his teeth and bit down on it hard. Only when he had mastered his breathing did he speak again.
Look, just give me some of the social. I will go back out and get us some dinner. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Well, there isn't any money. How?
The life returned to his shoulders.
So, Monday books, Tuesday books. Where has all the week's money gone?
She said, with a flourish of her hand. It looked like a fluttering bird that wore its only colour on the very tips of its wings.
It's gone away. Vanished. Just like all the bad bastards I've ever known.
Shuggy leaned over her now and looked down the secret side of her chair. There were only the 6 cans of cheap lager. It wasn't enough to waste the entire benefit.
Gone where? Oh, up the bingo. It was a snowball the day, she said. Well, that, and I bought a wee filled roll. Excuse me. Agnes, he said, we'll starve.
Agnes cleared her throat. Then she shrugged her shoulders.
Aye, probably.
Shuggy sat down in the middle of the settee and looked into the hot bars of the fire. Agnes took another can and with a painted nail slipped the ring pull off with a delicious hiss. The fight started to seep out of her.
Look, you better eat all the lunches. That'll be one hot meal, I suppose.
He spoke very quietly.
They've been taking the tickets off of me. I've not been getting the free lunch.
He looked at her face. She had sunked her head back over her neck in affronted confusion.
These boys in fourth year, they don't like how I speak,
They said I was too posh. They took the tickets. They've been eating my lunch.
Something cleared in her eyes. The fire made its pinging song, the coiled bars bursting with orange heat. But now she felt only cold.
"We'll starve," she said, quietly. "I know."
They sat in the beaming heat of the electric fire for a long while, before Shuggy stood up again. The fire was making him sleepy, and the lager smell was making him sick. He had to get out. He thought he might go up to the main road to try what Kira taught him and steal some crisps from the newsagents for their supper. 4 or 5 packets, he thought, and then neither of them would be hungry anymore. Agnes watched him stand and silently shuffle to the door, his feet flattening the carpet as he went. The stretch he had taken meant he was almost as tall as his brother. He was nearly 15, and the growing pains had made him irritable. He looked to her like a piece of pale sugar toffee, pulled too long, ready to break in the middle. She could see her sons had the same old man's stoop, Alexander and Hugh, the same burdened shoulders. Watching him, she felt a longing for her other boy. She tried to cover it up.
"Oh, so are you leaving me now as well? What? Taken all you could get, and now you are done. What?"
He couldn't take in what she was saying.
"You've never gone hungry before. Never once in all these years." "I know,"
he lied. There was no use in fighting her now. With difficulty, Agnes got herself up and out of the chair. She shoved the boy, who was hovering aimlessly between here and there.
"Well, here. Let me bloody help you."
She stolted out the door into the hallway. Her shoulder connected with a doorframe and rattled with a crack. He listened to her nails click on the buttons of the telephone. He heard her complain to herself under her breath and then,
"Hello. Yes. Taxi, please. For Bay. That's right. Off the parade."
She came back into the room, looking victorious.
"Well, I never thought you would leave me. Come on,"
he pleaded, his hands open and stretched out towards her. Nothing inside him wanted to harm her.
"I'm not leaving."
She slid back into her drinking chair.
"Ah, you are. They all leave, every last one. Where would I even go? I don't have anywhere to go."
Agnes had started to turn inwards. She started talking to herself.
"I've raised nothing but a shower of ungrateful swine. I've seen you looking out that door, watching that clock. Well, to hell with you."
Out on the street, the horn of a hackney pumped 3 times. The thrum of the diesel engine echoed up the canyon of tenements.
"Go on," she spat. "Go, away to your fucking brothers. See if he'll feed you. See if I care." "No, I don't want to go. I am meant to stay here with you, just you and me, like we promised each other."
His lips started to tremble. He crossed the room to her and tried to hold her, tried to lace his fingers behind her neck. Sounding impatient, the taxi pumped its horn again. She took his arms and pressed her nails into the soft flesh by his wrists.
"You and your fucking promises. I've never met a man who kept one yet. You can all sit around and stuff yourselves till you're full, and then you can laugh. Agnes Bain, ha fucking ha. No."
He struggled to grip her hair, her jumper, her neck, anything.
"Look,"
she reasoned as she unpicked him from herself. For a moment, her eyes cleared of the fog and his mother seemed like she might actually be in there.
"Don't you ask me to phone you a taxi and then stand there and make a liar out of me. Get in your bag. You're papped."
The telephone rang. She shoved him away and a great shower of beads ripped from the neck of her jumper. The telephone kept ringing,
The ringing bells were hammering his skull. Shuggy answered it in a daze, and a gruff-sounding man asked,
"Taxi for Bain, pal?"
"Uh-huh." He wiped his face in his sleeve.
"Well, your driver's downstairs. He's not got all bloody day."
Shuggy put the phone back on the cradle and stood in the hallway, waiting for her to say something, anything. Agnes could have said anything then, and he would have taken it and he would have forgiven her. He would have sat back at her side and wrapped his arms around her legs. He could starve, as long as they starved together. No. Agnes wouldn't look at him. She didn't say a single word. So Shuggy picked up the school bag and went out the door, down the winding stairs and out of the tiled close. The driver folded his newspaper as the boy got into the Black Hackney. Agnes went to the bay window and looked down into the narrow street. She watched her baby come out of the close mouth and search the sky for her. She nodded smugly that she had been right. She had always known he would leave her, like they all did. She watched him climb into the waiting taxi, and she knew then that she had lost him. The driver asked Shuggy where he was going. The boy just sat there and had to think for a long time, unsure of where to go now, stalling for any sign of hope. His eyes flitted nervously to the mouth of the close. He wiped his eyes on the sleeve of his school jumper, hoping each time he pulled his hand away that she would be there. The driver watched him in the mirror and then turned round with a concerned look.
"You all right, wee man?"
he asked with thin patience. No one came to the close mouth.
"South side, please."
The taxi took the boy through the busy heart of Glasgow, in a rambling line from the East End to the South Side. They passed the Victorian train station, and he saw lost-looking boys his own age standing in bubble-shaped anoraks and tight denims, loitering around the arcades and amusements that clustered nearby. The taxi went down one of the streets lined with office buildings, and people were leaving their work and queuing at the bus stops on the corners. The lights came on in the pound stores, and he watched women with shopping bags full of Christmas presents. Several times he cleared his throat to ask the taxi to turn around, but he never did. They flew across the wide grey Clyde, with its disused blue cranes and shipbuilders' yards.
"Where to exactly, pal?"
asked the man. Shuggy didn't know the exact address. He knew it was on the Kilmarnock Road, and he was pretty sure it was above the savings bank, so he told the man as much. The driver sighed and lowered his head, driving slowly along the congested main road and looking for a bank with a blue sign in a corner. Here, the Victorian tenements still had a grandeur to them. They were cut from expensive red sandstone, and not the porous blonde of the East End that sucked up all the dirt and black damp of the city and held on to it for decades. This road was alive with the transient energy of students, emigrants and young professionals. The taxi passed wine bars and delicatessens. There were small bookstores, pubs with tables out on the street, and shops that sold the latest clothes from down south. Shuggy was watching a young woman with flowers in the basket of her bike and almost missed the bank. It was there, on the left, old and drafty looking, with a big blue sign, just as he had remembered it. The taxi did a neat pirouette.
£12,
said the man, punching the meter. Shuggy felt the panic rise.
"Wait a minute, please," he said, reaching for the door handle.
"No, pal." The old driver locked the door remotely. £12, please."
Shuggy tried the locked handle. It wouldn't budge.
"Please, my brother will pay, and he lives in that building there."
"Son, you must think I was born yesterday. If I open this door, you'll be off up that street like a dirty mick with a hot potato."
Shuggy slid back in the seat.
Mister, I don't have any money.
The driver barely winced at what he had seen.